So thermodynamics appear because men and land wanted to build heat engines, wanted to build steam engines. Right? And what are steam engines? They're just a way of converting energy that we cannot control, which you call heat, like a fire, into something we can control, like a train, and you can use to do things for us. Right? And what were the initial conditions for this theory? Well, the first was that we were studying gas. Right? We were talking about steam. And the gas is a very large, very uncorrelated system. Right? So it's large. And we wanted to know how this system behaved. And the other thing is that we didn't have much information about this system at the time. So we could measure the temperature, or could measure the volume, or the total energy. We could guess the density, but nothing microscopic, like the velocity of each particle. Right? So we had little information, like temperature, or pressure, or density, volume. And another thing was that this information was the same for all observers. Like, all scientists could only measure a few microscopic parameters. Okay, so it was, say, not objective, it was same for all scientists, for all observers. And so this theory was developed. And a consequence of these two assumptions, or initial conditions, was that it came out to be a very objective theory. So any scientist would take a heat bath and be able to extract the same amount of work from it than another scientist that would come and take the same heat bath, because they had the access to the same information. So it also led to a very objective thing, like I guess Newton's gravitation in the beginning. But since very early, there were little thought experiments that were kind of poking this idea of it being objective. Wait, there you go. So one was called Maxwell's Demon, which is this problem that we have a box full of gas, right? In a gas, some particles are faster and some are slower. And it's the average velocity that gives us the temperature of the gas, right? And now we have a little demon here in the middle operating a little trapdoor. And if it sees a fast particle coming, it lets it come to the right. And if it's slow, it lets it go to the left, but nothing else, right? So at the end, we have all the fast particles here and all the very slow particles here. What this means is that the right part of this container will be much hotter than this part. And our demon can just, you know, let this gas expand and extract some work from it. But, and this was very puzzling at the time, because it seemed like the demon was extracting work from nothing in a situation where an observer that would only know the temperature and pressure and volume of the gas could not extract any work. And of course, at the point here is that you're missing something. You're missing modeling the initial information that one has about the system. Right? So it's not like he's extracting work from nothing. He's extracting work from his information of the velocity of each particle. Right, and there are other little thought experiments, like, so that's Maxwell's demon. Like Szilard heat engines, which is very simple. So we have, again, a box, two parts, and there's a particle somewhere in the box. So it could be on this side or on that side. and the task is to extract work from here. And if we have an observer that, say you call her Alice, that knows where the particle is, she can just, you know, again, let this particle bump against the walls here, and eventually, you know, push this wall again and extract work from there. But if we have an observer that doesn't know, that's Bob, that doesn't know where the particle is, he can't do this because, like, if you put it on this side, then half the time you'll get it wrong, and you'll, like, his little bucket will go down instead of going up. Right? And there's yet another little thought experiment that is Landauer's principle. Yes, I say, okay, so suppose we are Bob here. We don't know where the particle is, but we want at the end to take the particle to the left. Okay? We want to end in this situation. How much work do we have to do? And one of the things Bob can do is to just add an extra wall here and then push it all the way. And for this, you'll have to do some work. Right? Okay. So there are several signs that thermodynamics is not complete unless we consider initial information about what information an observer has about a system. And that it is not as much a theory about how the world works, but more about what we can do with what the world gives us, given our initial knowledge. So can we build a steam engine? Okay. So So along came the information pirates. Which are people that didn't even all started from physics, some from computation science, or some from mathematics even. And they are interested in many different tasks, like how much information can we cross, can we take across a channel? Or how can we encode information so that it is secure? Or like, what is our probability of guessing the outcomes of an experiment, and how can we use this information? And so they started coming up with ways of quantifying information. Okay, and instead of quantifying information, they decided to quantify the opposite, our ignorance, our uncertainty, with entropy measures. So it's like the entropies. And from very early, it became clear that we can't just talk about entropy or uncertainty of a system, per se, but of a system for a given observer. Because, for instance, you can have this case here where one observer clearly knows where the particle is, but the other one doesn't know, right? And the other thing that became obvious very soon is that there's no universal measure of uncertainty, but there are many different measures depending on what the task is. For instance, I can be interested in knowing. So say this is the probability of getting all the different outcomes of a die. I can be interested in knowing what is my probability of guessing the outcome correctly. And then the only thing that matters is like this peak of the probability distribution. Or I can be interested in knowing how large a memory do I need to store all the possible outcomes. In this case, what I care about is this. Or what if I dismiss some very, very unlikely outcomes that will never happen, like getting a 6, which is very unlikely in this bias stat? Then like instead of caring about all of these, I don't care about that. Anyway, so we have several entropy measures. And what they found out is that many entropy measures that are useful for different tasks all converge to the same for large and correlated systems. Like you repeat an experiment many, many times, you toss a coin many, many times, and then all these entropies, like we call some edge max, edge mean, etc., all they converge to the so-called Shannon entropy or von Neumann entropy in the quantum case. And this entropy is a lot like the entropy. Well, it has the same formula as the entropy used here in thermodynamics. And the reason why that should hold is because we are talking about large and correlated systems. But it's not necessarily the measure that counts for little tasks in little systems. And another thing they found out is information parity, is that if you have quantum information, you can do many more things you can't do classically. Like you can transmit information absolutely securely, or you can do what you call teleportation, or if you have a quantum memory, you can guess the outcomes of an experiment with 100% probability, which kind of seems to contradict Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. You know, we could talk about it later. So they decided to apply all these tools they had to thermodynamics. Okay, and thermodynamics is no longer about gas in systems, but it can be about things like, sorry, this is my impression of a maglev, of things like spin systems, or things in which things like Landauer's principle are no longer about pushing a gas container, but for instance, take any state of the system to zero. Right? How much time do I have? 2 minutes, okay. So to give just a very quick example of how using these tools can give us something. So it's obvious that if I know that the original state, so I'm Alice, so if I know that the original state is 1, then I can just apply any unitary operation from 1 to 0 and get 0 at no work cost. But if I don't know the state of the system, if I'm like here, if I'm Bob, so I represent the system as identity over 2 or like this matrix. Then to take it to 0, I have to do KT log 2 work. And if I have quantum information now about the system that I want to erase, which is not that unreasonable, we can think that in the future we'll have quantum computers and I have like 2 memories and they're correlated and I want to erase one of them. So I want to erase it, which means like when you format a disk and you take whatever state of your disk is to, you just write zeros all over. I want to erase this memory. And if my memory is entangled with the system I want to erase, I can actually extract work in the process of erasing instead of having to do work. And that's not magic, and it's not like contradicting the second law of thermodynamics. It's just that when these things originally were thought, we didn't consider even the hypothesis of having information about the system in the first place or to having quantum information about the system. And now that you think about it, we can do more things, which I don't have time to explain. That's all.